Good morning. I'm Mark Anielski, your host on the Economy of Wellbeing podcast. I'm so blessed to have one of my earlier guests back on the show, theologian Walter Brueggemann, who will be 88 next month. That is in March. You know, it's so important to get the stories of our elders before they pass on, that they can share their wisdom. Walter's written so many books, about 140 now and counting, and he's still so active in his testimony, in his reflections. He said today on the podcast with me, we need to learn to read the Bible better. We've missed the point of the Bible, and the church has cast its model that are in betrayal of the biblical faith. Not only the difficulty in the parish, but also we see difficulties in scholarship that is being compromised by the Enlightenment. Are we over the Enlightenment? We talk about today. I hope you find this lively and fun and humorous conversation with Walter uplifting. I know I did. And I'm so blessed and thankful for people like Walter, these prophetic voices. Our last conversation was on his previous book, The Gospel of Hope. I hope this conversation lifts your spirits from an 87-year-old wisdom keeper, still alive, still kicking, still laughing, and still finding joy in the midst of shadow and darkness and gloom. Indeed, Walter, I think we can come out of Egypt if we choose to. Good morning, Walter. How is the great prophet?
I haven't talked to anyone like that lately.
I was listening to your...
How's the great economist?
Well, you know, shaken but never stirred, as James Bond. Well, it seems like the well-being theme is growing in spite of all the doom and darkness.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Sure.
I've got you and John Cobb on today. John Cobb turned 96 yesterday or Tuesday, so still going strong.
How is he? How's his health?
He's really good. His mind is so sharp and he's incredible.
Oh, that's great.
I was in Seoul, Korea with him last October, the previous year, right? And they would say, Dr. Cobb, you're old. You need to sit down. He goes, I'm not sitting down. I can stand and speak quite nicely. Thank you very much.
Good for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
And how is life for you?
Oh, you know, we're in a shutdown mode pretty much. And right now we're glued to the television for the impeachment.
Yeah. Well, you guys are. We kind of just ignore the theater up here.
Yes, right, yeah.
It seems to go on and on and on.
Yes, that's right. Right, yeah. But otherwise, I'm fine. The only work I'm doing now is I contribute to a blog fairly frequently, but that's all I'm doing. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
To your on your website or what?
No, it's a woman in Minneapolis who runs it. It's the tag is Church Anew, so I'm just one of the contributors to it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, maybe that's what we can talk about, what you're thinking, what you're contributing to. I was thinking, what kind of questions? I have to tell you that you're the most popular guest on my podcast in my short history of a couple of years running now. Your most listened to guest. I was like, wait a minute, but he's an Old Testament scholar. It has nothing to do with economics, but so you're clearly popular.
good. Well, I would think that I think the blog to which I contribute is primarily aimed at clergy. So that's my primary audience.
Right.
And I think that my strong urging to that set of clergy companions is that we have to recover our nerve for the truth that has been entrusted to us. And we've so compromised it that when we talk straight about the gospel and its economy, it sounds so dangerous and so subversive and all of that.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about that? Because, you know, being a Catholic, I think you released your last book, what, in April or something? So in the early days of COVID. And yeah. And I'm listening to, there's some interesting debate within the Catholic Church, you know, I wouldn't call it a schism, but an interesting party saying, some saying we've lost our nerve. I have this image of a more muscular Jesus. And I remember you saying we got to come out of Egypt. And so here we are in the state of, I would call it heightened emotion, when I think you're saying we need, the prophets of old would say, repent, get on your knees and be humbled and just ask God for help. Like, don't get so caught up in the spin cycle of emotion. And so what are you saying to our church leaders in terms of how do we maintain that nerve, as say Isaiah might encourage us? Or,
well, of course, I'm a teacher, so that always comes through. But I just think we need to learn to read the Bible better. We've missed the point of so much of the Bible, and the church has cast its models in ways that are essentially a betrayal of the radicality of biblical faith. So that's, and I think that's not only because of the difficulty in the parish, but it is also because of a long history of scholarship that has been so compromised by the Enlightenment and all of that. Yeah.
Interesting. By the Enlightenment, yeah. Which is interesting reflection. Are we over enlightened?
Oh, I think we are, because what Enlightenment scholarship has done is to explain away everything that is interesting in the text.
Thank you. After 140 some books, you could say that with some authority.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
And one of the ways the church does that is by the lectionary, and it leaves out many of the texts to which we should be paying attention.
So what you're saying is actually the path forward is rather simple if we just humble ourselves to the simplicity of the truth, the gospel of joy or hope or love.
Yeah. It's simple. It's simple if we had more courage, I think. But it's not easy to muster courage.
I think you and I have reflected, one of my favorite, whether it's true or not, is Thomas Aquinas' story that 2 years before he died, he went into absolute silence. He went into a convent and never spoke again, but had such a mystical experience. He was obviously eclipsed by God's love in some way that he said, all I've written is but straw compared to.
Right. Yeah. We're always discovering that, aren't we?
Are we ever? Or it's like my favorite book, The Cloud of Unknowing, anonymous author.
That's right. Yeah. So what is your, Mark, what's your current work? What are you working at?
Well, I've been blessed with working with First Nations, Indigenous, right? Indian, as you still call them in America. So they've entrusted me with helping them establish a well-being economic operating system. So that goes, that then grounds all of their decisions in their Indigenous laws and customs, and especially the matrilineal cultures, the Iroquois, right? You've got the Six Nations on both sides of the border. Yeah. And you've got some British Columbia First Nations who have no treaty. So I'm working with one of those and a Cree Nation in Northern Manitoba. And so just during COVID, we did a well-being survey of their members. And I was so encouraged in spite of, the trauma that they've endured under colonization, right? The massive deaths that they've endured. There, it was a level of hope and joy that really surprised me. And it came out of the women who said, you know, in spite of everything we've experienced, they lost 30 members to COVID over the last 8 months out of 3,200 members.
Why?
And of course, there's comorbidity there with diabetes and all these other right chronic illnesses that COVID actually has that comorbidity effect. But the point was that they said, how is it that we would rank number four in the world of life satisfaction rankings behind Finland and Denmark? And I said, I don't know. I said, these were your people filling out my survey. 15% of the population from age 10 to 80 filled out my survey, my well-being survey. So I said, that for me engenders hope that you are resilient, even with this latest pandemic. And you've endured so much suffering. And so it's a call to wisdom of Indigenous women who the Onondaga say the women carry the law of water in their DNA, in their bodies. The great law of peace, which was given to them 2,000 years ago, some say it was Jesus, appeared on Lake Onondaga and helped the warring men stop fighting and listen to this person who came from afar to give them the great law of peace.
Wow.
So for me, that's so exciting. I like these Indigenous people still have something to teach us, even if we wipe them out almost completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I've been working on. And it just energizes me. I'm about to run the biggest well-being survey of my life in all of Ireland. The largest independent media outlet has hired me to develop a survey of a well-being survey.
Wow.
But I'm asking questions like, how much joy do you feel? How much love do you feel in your life? How do you sleep at night? You know, really tough questions one ever asks us. And yeah. I think we're going to have so much fun comparing, you know, do people in Cork sleep better than people in East Dublin? I don't know. We'll find out. And I'll say that's because they drink more Jameson whiskey per capita in Cork. You know? And we'll sell more newspapers.
I have one Cork story. I was in Cork once, and I was trying to find my way in the city, and I asked directions of a guy on the street, and he said, well, you just go down here and so on. And I said, but that's a one-way street the other way. He said, use a little common sense.
Irish sense of humor.
Well, who did you say? Denmark, Finland, and who's the other one?
Well, this nation's called the Apaskwayak. They're a Cree nation. So I said, based on my survey results, you would rank right behind Finland, Denmark, and Switzerland. So you'd be fourth overall. And you'd be ahead of, and Canada ranked 11th place last year in the World Happiness Survey. So I said, you would rank ahead of Canada, and you're a poor First Nation, but you have customs and your language is still alive. You have an amazing chief who's a former Canadian military sniper, so he knows war. and he said, Mark, during COVID, I said, we're having such a big challenge. I called my buddies in the Canadian military and the army just showed up. So I got to go now. They're here to help us. He just called in the troops, called in his favor.
That's good.
So, that's yeah. So, you know, their sense of humor is shocking. It's so impressive to me. Like they always have. Yeah. Especially the Cree people, they had this incredible sense of humor in spite of the hardship. So, and they too see, like they also see prophetic, you know. I remember Oran Lyons, who must be 90 years old now, from the Onondaga. He's the faith keeper of the Turtle Clan. They're all clan-based and matrilineal still up in there near Syracuse there. You know, and he said, I see this coming. This is this whatever is going to come. That was like 4 years ago when I met him. But he said, you know, something new is emerging. It's the end of the Truer Wampum that we signed with George Washington, and the Circle Wampum is emerging. Something new is emerging. And so in spite of all the drama and emotion we see in the world, something is being born. I think that's.
Yep. That's good. That's great.
Yeah.
That's good.
So what prophetic wisdom do you is on your heart these days? or is the lake speaking to you?
Is what?
Is what the is lake, that? Aren't you on Lake Michigan? Michigan, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you were saying that the last podcast, you said you and your wife were walking and you saw this big boat, and the boat's title was Lion Share, and you were laughing about that.
Yeah. Well, I think the prophetic word now is obvious, and that is that we have to reorganize our economy for the sake of the neighbors. I've just been reading a book called The Deficit Myth, about a modern monetary theory. You know that?
Yeah, I know quite a lot about MMT.
Yeah. Which it seems to me that Joe Biden is appealing to with his big proposal of more money than we can pay for, except according to that theory, it's okay. Yeah.
Well, as you know, my work is as a Canadian, I remind Americans that you fought the Revolutionary War for this very reason. So you have the sovereignty, create your own money. And also that means something important during COVID, because deficits and running debt to in a national emergency means you can write it off when the emergency is over.
Right, but
nobody has that conversation. I'm showing that now in Canada. We added to $700 billion before the COVID crisis. We added another $400 billion in 7 months of new debt. Wow. Now, that doesn't make the news. No one's talking about it. And no one says, well, who's going to pay for it? And then you just have to stop and think. It's like, no, we still have a sovereign central bank. They could buy the debt and they could forgive it when the war is over.
Just
like we paid for World War II, right? We did the same thing and then we wrote it off. So, but if we don't have that understanding of the power of monetary policy, right, then we will just have more emotion and anguish about what's going to happen after the crisis is over. So have you been in discussion with John or Peter Block, John McKnight?
We have a once a month Zoom schedule, which we talk, and Peter sort of keeps us going.
He does, doesn't he?
He wants us to keep walking around the theme of wilderness in the Bible as a metaphor for the neighborhood. The neighborhood which is without visible resources but has resources. So that's kind of what we're doing.
Our resources are locked down for a while.
Yes, that's right.
Are you seeing on that subject of neighborhood assets? I mean, what I'm seeing is, I mean, COVID in a way has been a kind of a blessing. I don't have to travel anymore. I could be more efficient on Zoom than I ever was when I was sitting in airports or whatever, you know. So the possibility of vibrant local economies, I think, is more likely now than it's ever been.
I think that's right. Yep. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that could be a plus that comes out of it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So Peter has in mind that the three of us should do one more book, but I don't know how that's going to emerge.
Yeah. Well, I think like the last one is put the iPhone on the table and record, right?
Well, I think that's
and transcribe the pearls of wisdom.
Of old men.
yeah, the usual same three white men.
Yes.
Maybe we should put our wives next to us and comment.
That's right. that would be a plus.
Wouldn't that be funny? I know my wife would be like, all you do, Mark, is talk all day. It's like, what do you have to say?
exactly. Right. Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness for the women in their lives. Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
So you moved up to Northern Michigan to be with your daughter, right? Or close to your daughter?
Sorry. No, my wife Tia is from Michigan.
Oh, right. She is from Michigan.
And she wanted to be back by the water. And we do love it here.
So, oh.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, right.
So were you actually in Georgia? Because you're emeritus professor there, right?
Yes, I was in Georgia about 20 years. Then when T and I got married, we moved to Cincinnati. And we were in Cincinnati a decade.
Okay.
And then we moved here. We moved here 3 years ago.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wonderful. So, wonderful.
Yeah. We were gonna move here earlier, but it's not. I was traveling a lot, and it's not an easy place to travel from, so we didn't do it then. So
yeah. And now you don't need to, and you don't don't have to risk. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
So you're healthy and you're.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I'll turn 88 in a month.
Wow.
And I got my aches and pains, but I guess I shouldn't complain when I think of John Cobb. Why? he's how old?
He just turned 96 on Tuesday.
Wow, amazing! Yeah,
I know. He goes, "You'll have to help me turn on Zoom. I'm not quite sure how to do it all." It's like, that's fine, you.
Oh, I see. Right.
But the man was born in Hiroshima, right, in Japan. So, yeah.
He was?
Yeah. He grew up in Japan. His parents were Methodist missionaries, I think. And,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why I think he has a love for Asia, because he just, it's like it's in his bones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Do you by any chance know Steve Heinrichs, who's a Mennonite? I don't assume all Canadians know each other.
No, where's Steve based?
I don't know. It may be Toronto. He's in the Mennonite headquarters, and he works on First Nation stuff.
That's okay. What he does. So yeah. The Mennonites have been very they've been champions of restorative justice. So I suspect she knows him.
Yeah.
I don't.
I just wondered.
Yeah. But yeah, he's what?
He's done good work on the doctrine of discovery from the Catholic Church and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know all about that papal bull that
Yes.
Indeed. Really? That's how this all happened between the papacy and London, the corporation. That's how they took Turtle Island. Yeah.
That's right.
And with a flag too, as they needed the flag. And I also reminded that the brilliance of Rome and Britain was a codification of law. And of course, indigenous people didn't have codified law. They had oral law, which they never wrote down. So even when they signed treaties, they were kind of oral agreements. It's quite remarkable to think that this was the art of war, will be to codify their laws so they have equal standing in our courts.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But not the spiritual laws. They will never write the spiritual laws down.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's in any event, that's what gives me hope. I think America's a little different with Indian bands, but you know, the fact that we can apply the well-being kind of economy protocol to any nation now is possible. So
yes, right.
And that moves them closer to sovereignty and returning back to stewards, the original stewards of Turtle Island, right? And somehow, I mean, it's yes. going to be a long process. But
I'm sure, right?
Yeah. So, the discussion of you with John and Peter about walking in the wilderness of the neighborhood, what kind of themes are emerging in that conversation?
Well, just the ones you would expect, that there are hidden resources and that you can't find the hidden resources till you walk away from the guaranteed resources of Pharaoh or whatever and so on. So that's kind of what we're working on, but we're not working very hard on it. So,
So I'm curious, one thing that came to my heart during COVID was to play with the Declaration of Independence and imagine, and the Great Charter of Freedom, the Magna Carta, as foundational documents that gave rise to the United States and to Britain, really, in the Magna Carta. Yeah. And imagine that if you try to put the word love in those documents, in those sentences, what it might sound like and read. Which I think ties back to the prophetic, you know. And so for me, it's like, no, if love becomes the clarion united, you know, call of brotherhood, sisterhood. Then what would happen in the conscience of the nation if we started to speak those words in that?
Right. Yeah. Is that in the vocabulary of the first peoples?
Love? No. Well, it would be like saying, how many words do the Inuit have or Eskimo have for snow, right?
Yes.
But it's a good question because, you know, in survey design, you sort of say, well, if you ask the happiness question in Korea versus, you know, Atlanta, you might get different responses because we respond to that word differently, right?
Sure, of course.
So, of course, as you know, there's so many different nuances around the word love that Aristotle like defined and Aquinas and everybody else. So,
right.
So love is a kind of a loaded word, but love in the indigenous way would be translated into all my relations. So, you know, when they go into the sweat lodge, you say, when you crawl into the dark, you know, womb, you say all my relations. And I didn't understand what that meant. What it means is you're bringing in all of your relations, you know, past and even future, and even the animals into the sweat lodge. That is your prayer. And so all your ancestors are there with you in that moment, in that.
Oh, wow.
In those 4 hours of hell, because it's hot. It's like, holy moly, it's hot. I thought the first one, I thought I was going to die. I thought there's no way I can be really, you know, centered in my prayer, but it was really tough. So when I think about that, I think about seven generations, and if they're always thinking all my relations, including the relationship with the animals and the plants, then life is a continuous prayer of thanks to the Creator, right?
Right.
And that's what they remind me of. Like every time we open a meeting, an elder has to pray. And I'm like, do we start our meetings that way? Or do we have the agenda and we have Robert's rules? And, you know, maybe if we're in Christian circles or Jewish circles, we might pray. But they pray all the time. They pray for everything.
Yeah.
And that this meeting will go well, right? That the ancestors will be pleased with us, right? That.
The U.S. Senate has a new African-American chaplain, and you know, they open every day with prayer. And we've gotten his prayers the last couple of days because of the impeachment. And they are very short, terrific prayers that are rooted in the Bible and point toward justice. And this is really amazing stuff that they let this guy be the chaplain. So
wow.
If they're
attentive to his prayers, then
if they're listening, why?
They're really listening. So I don't mean to go political, but I'm curious, you know, watching has gone on in America over the last, since COVID really, if not before, the dynamic between, you know, those who supported Trump and those who didn't, and particularly the strong Christian element who thought that Trump was kind of certainly a flawed person, but still the best hope for the Republic to survive. Yeah. I mean, as a prophetic scholar, like, and I guess it's just your personal view, is how do you, I'm sure you have these discussions with friends and family who are on both sides of the debate.
That's right. Well, I just think that they have, those kind of evangelicals have drunk the Kool-Aid of American capitalism and have no capacity for self-criticism at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they just get sucked in. And it's astonishing that that could happen to large bodies of Christians and very prominent leaders. It's just
astonishing,
completely bewildering. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the word that comes to me. I'm just bewildered. And bewildered that there's no space for, you know, a platform for open and respectful conversation.
Right. That's right.
One can excuse the social media platforms of also suppression of dialogue. And so, of course, you suppress them, then they will say, well, see, we told you it's a conspiracy against truth. And so it's just fascinating to watch the lack of, you know, what we might have seen in when Walter Cronkite was around, or, you know, in your era, where there might have been some semblance of, you know, a platform for honest dialogue.
Right, exactly.
Seems to be caught up, and again, the motion.
That's right.
Plays into a dictatorial kind of guy like Trump.
It does indeed. Yeah. And I think it's propelled by white nostalgia of wanting the old world back, where you had cheap, docile labor, and was a very nice way to live.
It was a nice, yeah.
There's a report in the paper this morning that a good percentage of the people that stormed the Capitol have personal records of financial failure. They're all into bankruptcy and unemployment and the whole bag. And Trump is a master of harnessing all of that. It's just astonishing.
Oh yeah, I mean, his whole life is—it's hard to believe he outwitted or called a bluff on bankers so many times and lived, you know.
That's right.
It is interesting because that the energy of his financial relationships is obviously impacting those who also have interesting relationships with money.
That's right.
And I think that therein it lies to me. It's like the spirit of money itself, the energy of money is fascinating, how corrupting it can be.
Yeah, that's right. And,
you know, that's why I love the conversation we had in Cincinnati. It's like, how do we transcend or transmute that energy, become each other's bankers? And still got a long way to go.
Yes, we won't. We won't run out of things to do.
No, we won't.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. But I still have some energy, and we're, you know, with the First Nations. I just met the former Grand Chief of the Six Nations in Ontario. They're the sort of Algonquin and in the Toronto area, Mississauga, just across the border from you. And
yes.
His name is Larry, like Sue Samuel, Larry So, or Sue, I guess his name. And we talked about, you know, the possibility of creating a sovereign wealth fund and bank that's tied to, you know, well-being of Six Nations. And they're still matrilineal, so that's really encouraging that the women call the shot. The women elect the chiefs, right?
Is that right?
Yeah. And they have the right of recall. Imagine if that was the case, right?
but the chief is a man.
The chief's a man, but even the word chief, they say, is the colonizer word. In fact, they would rather use the word in the Cree that means leader for this particular time. So they would have a leader for economic development, but they wouldn't call him chief or peace or justice, right? And that man would have been elected by one of the clan mothers from their clan to represent. Like Oran Lyons is the Turtle Clan chief. There's 49 clans of 5,000 people who live in Onondaga. And those women sit on the long aspect of the longhouse. And behind them are the 49 osprey feathered headdresses representing the 49 clans.
Wow.
So the women, no, the big chief, Grand Chief Sid Hill and Oran Lyons are sitting up there like on the throne, but they know they're only there as long as the women say so you're still good to govern for the rest of your life or not. And I'm like, it's kind of funny, you know, it's like, oh, that's where the real power is, you know.
Right.
Oh, the stories are remarkable. And I mean, you know, again, that sense of humor is like, the women had the right of recall and the men in Congress or Senate, and vice versa, maybe too, for the women in Congress, the men have a say too.
Well, I think that's the way it used to be in many Christian congregations, that the governing boards were men, but their wives were very forcible.
Well, I sort of wonder, you being a, you know, an Old Testament scholar, whether the 12 tribes might have been governed that way, and or maybe it wasn't recorded that way. But, you know, even a lot of people say, you know, Jesus didn't have just men around him. He had Magdalene. There were women too. Yeah. Like there had to be women. Now they didn't make it into the footnotes of the New Testament, but they had to be there. Magdalene was there. At the end, you know, and so was his mother. But so you wonder, like, how come women have sort of been edited out?
I know. Yeah. And they're very present in the Old Testament as well. At many pivotal moments, a woman appears and makes a big difference.
That's right. Yeah. I don't know what you're smoking last night, Isaiah, but okay, you gotta write it down. We'll write down what you said.
Right.
I'll just go make breakfast. Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Wow. Well, thank you. This was
Well, it's great to catch up with you, and I think I had no idea that you were dealing with First Nations now. That isn't what I knew about you the last time we were together.
Because all of that has emerged, right? I mean, I had been making inroads. You know, I had some First Nation relate, but when I came to Cincinnati. But I also came to a place where I was really frustrated that they just couldn't move. I think because of their trauma, you know, the colonizers' impacts, residential schools, right? They self-sabotage because if you've been indoctrinated with you know, those residential school cultures, yeah. right? You've lost any sense of your elders' wisdom or, you know, traditional knowledge, and you turn to what you experience is violence, and right,
yeah,
and yeah. reciprocal violence and intergenerational violence. So yeah. it was very sad for me to see that happening, all that self-sabotaging going on, when I saw right. their potential and the joy and the spirit in them. And so it was only because I met Caroline Hilton, who's an Indigenous woman from Vancouver Island, and she was also an adopted Indian kid, right? Her father was a well-known physician in British Columbia. So her name's Hilton, her last name is Hilton, but of course that's not her Indigenous name.
Right.
She came up with this idea called Indigenomics. And she said, you know, being a 40-something year old, I just created a hashtag called hashtag Indigenomics. So I just made up a word. Said it was nothing but an idea. And she says, the way I function in the world is I live in the place of dreams. So whatever we dream basically can be manifest.
Right.
If I put one foot in front of the other. And so she said, I envision $100 billion Indigenous economy for Canada. And I said, where did that number come from? I just made it up. It's an aspirational number. And I'm like, well, I'm the economist. I can verify how close you are to that number. And I said, I think you're actually past that number. But we don't have to say that, because that number is attracting all of this energy. People are like, what is Indigenomics? And she says, who wants to play Indigenomics? Well, you can imagine all the men who are like, I want to play whatever this game is. I don't even know what this is, but 100 billion sounds so impressive. I'm attracted to money, and it's taken off. Yep. So now I'm her chief economist. Chief, right? What a joke. I am not a chief anything.
Yeah, right.
And I walk in absolute humility, surrounded by these incredible women. And guess what? It's the women running the show. They know how to govern and multitask and run right. these nations. you know, yeah. So I'm working with them. And there's no end to work. It's just growing and growing. And so that gives me such hope that this new generation, and then their children, hopefully their children, will transcend the woundedness, right?
Yep. Yep.
You know, it's funny. I was watching this week. I was watching, you know, when Marlon Brando won the Academy Award for Best Actor, right, for Godfather, 1973, yeah. I think. And I forgot. It's like, oh yeah, he didn't. He had this Apache woman stand up.
I remember
in her
that
full regalia, like a Shireen, her name was, or something. And so I watched it this week, and I'm like. And of course she had she never gave the full speech. And so I see her on another YouTube reading the full speech 45 years later, what she would have read, but she couldn't, of course. Yeah, and she was booed, and John Wayne was angry. All the old cowboys were, you know, Steve McQueen, they were enraged, right? Yeah. And I thought, wow. And she's still alive. She's in her 70s now.
Wow.
And she's like reflecting as an elder. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just what poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. That great.
Yeah.
the spirit keeps coming.
Just keeps coming. You can't kill it entirely. And that's what I love about being on Turtle Island. The spirit is still here. And so that intermingling between Old and New Testament and Indigenous teachings is just it's beautiful, really.
It's great. Yeah. Good.
Anyways, where do we find your, I'll put in the podcast notes, where we find your blog postings.
It's church.anew.
Anew, like A-N-E-W, anew.
Right.
Dot, yeah. Just church.anew.
That's it.
That's it. Yep. Wow, you can create your own like .com/anew. I like that. Anew.
It wasn't mine. She
no, it's so creative. Yeah. I didn't know you could just make
it's good. It's good. Yeah, right.
Well, thanks for joining me.
To you.
You too.
Yeah.
I'll say I did talk to Peter the other day. So, but it's fun having you on because you were one of my first guests on the show. So that was 2018, August.
Wow.
Yeah. So good. Time flies.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Good.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
Take care of yourself.
Thanks, you too. Love to your wife.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Have a blessed day.
You too.
Bye, Walter.